Okay, so what are we studying next week? Anybody know?
Obadiah, you said.
That's wrong. I was just testing you.
Then you fibbed to me, because that's what you said on the phone.
Did I?
Yeah.
What are we studying next week?
Nahum?
I'm sorry?
Must be Nahum if you changed your mind.
What?
Nahum,
Nahum, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very short, very short book. So we'll probably just cover that in one lesson.
Well, Lenny said you were going to finish Micah 6 and 7.
Well, we are. But we're going to do that tonight.
Oh, okay. That was that week. Next week.
Well, we were talking about school, and so that's why I get here.
Okay, evening, folks. Okay. All right, tonight we're going to start out in chapter 6 and 7 of the book of Micah, and then we'll just do a quick final review of the book that we've studied. Really grateful that Lenny had such short notice, but he stepped in and did the class for us last week, and I really appreciated it. Wanted to just thank you for that. Okay, tonight's final evening, we'll be studying the book of Micah, unless we have a lot of questions and discussion. And then that may push us into next week and Nahum the following week. So we have a lot of questions tonight, a lot of discussion we may not get through. I'm sure that we will. Okay, let's start with chapter 6. Chapter begins with the Lord's complaint against the children of Israel and the children of Judah as well. And in verse 3 through 5, the Lord asked, "What did I do? How did I wrong you? Did I wrong you? How did I make you tired of me?" You see that? Do we ask questions like that today? When we doubt, you know, you think that the Lord would ask these questions to us? What made me tired of you? What made you tired of me? Sometimes when our faith flags a little bit, and that question could be ours, couldn't it? But then the Lord continues, doesn't he? And he said, "I brought you out of Egyptian slavery. Look what I did for you. I brought you out of Egyptian slavery. I gave you leaders like Moses and Aaron and Miriam to lead you. Remember Balak and Balaam and their evil plans for you." Who was Balak?
King of Moab.
I'm sorry?
King of Moab.
Yeah, it was the king of Moab. And he was a cousin to the Israelites, wasn't he? Is this true?
I think so, because they were supposed to go through the land, weren't they, and they wouldn't let them go through the land?
Well, that is true.
They were related anyway.
The Israelites asked to go through the land, their land, and they said, "We won't turn left, we won't turn right, we won't drink any of your water, we won't visit your wells, we won't eat any of your food or your produce, just let us pass." And they got a no answer, didn't they? Do you think that God remembered that?
Sure.
Back down the road, he remembered that, didn't he? Never forgot it, but it was kind of put on the back shelf for a while. But God did remember that slight, didn't he? How were they related? Anybody remember? Moab? Moab came from Lot and his daughter. Yeah. And so they were cousins, basically. Second or third cousin, but they were cousins. Okay. Who was Balaam?
The son of Beor.
Whoever he was.
What was he?
Says he was the son of Beor.
Okay, that's true. What do we know about Balaam?
Wasn't he a prophet?
Yes.
And he's the one that the mule turned around on him. And what are you beating me for?
The mule stopped because he saw an angel.
A death angel.
And Balaam beat the dickens out of his horse. And the horse asked him, what are you beating me for? But what did Balaam do? He worked hand in glove with Balak, didn't he? Balak told him to say evil things about the Israelites. Remember that? Cast hateful prophecies on them. What happened?
He wanted to, but God wouldn't let him.
God wouldn't let him curse the Israelites, would he? He said good things about them. And we'll find out later that Balak and Balaam perished. God also told him to remember Shittim and Gilgal. Gilgal, what is he talking about there? Anybody?
Wasn't Gilgal the place where they built those stones?
Okay, that is true. You also see a little bit easier word that makes you comfortable to pronounce was Acacia Grove instead of the word Shittim. That was where was that located? Anybody know? Okay, remember when the Israelites came up to Gilead? And they took Gilead and that area east of the Jordan River. And they settled in there. And it was east of the Jordan. It was prior to their crossing. And an angel appeared to Joshua. Remember that? And led him. And the Israelites crossed the Jordan River. And the first place that they came to was Gilgal. And they had picked up a bunch of stones out of the middle of the river. What happened to the Jordan, by the way?
Dried out.
Yeah, it was completely dry.
The heat.
Yeah, it was. And they took stones out of the middle of the river and set it up as a dedication to God and for a remembrance for the children of Israel every time they saw that they would remember the Israelites crossing into the promised land. And so it was set up as a, but they were also instructed to tell their children and their children's children and to the so many generations to always try to remember that. Who forgot it? Yeah, everybody forgot it down the road, didn't they? There, I'm sure, were some faithful people that remembered that, but there weren't very many. What about the kings? Did they remember that? There wasn't one righteous king out of the bunch in northern Israel, or Israel, was there? They were all evil. And so their country was short-lived. What else happened at Gilgal? Can you remember?
It had something to do with Saul, didn't it?
Well, all of the children that were born out in the desert country and the wilderness after they left Egypt they weren't circumcised. And so when they stopped at Gilgal, they were all the male children, all the male men, everyone, were circumcised there at Gilgal. So they got back into God's good graces there, didn't they? What city was it close to? Gilgal, remember? Was inside of the first city that they destroyed?
Jericho.
Jericho?
Yeah.
Can you imagine 2 million people, 3 million people, I don't know how many, there were 600,000 army soldiers or of age to be in the army. And how many women and children and old people like me that, you know, walked along in the dust of everybody else because they were so decrepit, weak, old.
Feeble.
Senile. All described to me.
But anyway, really good, didn't
they were, you know, there were a lot of people. Can you imagine the people in Jericho standing up on their wall and looking at this? It had to be pretty frightening, didn't it?
Well, until they just walked around the city.
Well,
and
yeah.
that's your best shot, to walk around the city.
Well, I think they knew something was up, and certainly, who was the lady that ended up surviving?
Rahab.
I'm sorry?
Rahab.
Rahab, yeah. She saw that too, didn't she? But she knew that, she said that, their fear was so great that their knees knocked together and their courage turned to water. So she knew. Okay. God reminded him all this, of this, didn't he? All of these things that he had, I brought you out of Egypt. I freed you from slavery. I led you through Moses and Aaron and Miriam during your time in the wilderness. Gave you all these things and protected you. So what are they saying? What are these people saying? Lord, what do you want us to do? Right? What can we bring before the Lord? Shall we offer burnt offerings? With 1-year-old male calves? 1,000 male sheep? 10,000 rivers of oil? Sacrifice our firstborn? These are the things that these people are asking God. But what should we do? What did the Lord tell them?
Verse 8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God.
Yeah. So Micah answers, doesn't he? He says, the Lord told you what he wants from you. Do what is right to other people. Love being kind to one another. Live humbly. Trust in the Lord. These things that we can apply to our lives today? Sure. I think these are things that God made sure that we understand. That these are the things that we need to do in our own lives. So I don't think anything has changed there, has it? All down through time. Okay.
Well, I think that it's such a simple concept that God gives us. But when we get to the New Testament, we see how we muddled it up. We see how the Israelites muddled it up. We have to have book after book after book after book of examples and stories
to just grasp this concept. Love God, love his neighbor, right? I mean, it's just, it's that simple. And yet we add and we subtract and we forget and I don't know, I think it's pretty wild.
Yeah, we have short memories, so we always have to be reminded. But yeah, very, very simple lesson, and yet look what it cost the people of Israel and Judah eventually. Cost them everything, didn't it? So chapter 6 talks about God's controversy with his people. And we see the sign and the sins of Micah's time, don't we? They're not any different than what we have today, basically.
Oh, I bet Marcia went out locked out.
But we see ungratefulness towards God. See that all the time. How about pretending to be religious? See that all the time. And you know, that makes me think sometimes. You know, and I make the mistake quite often, and I try to catch myself at it. But that is to really put things aside when I'm taking the Lord's Supper and try to just focus on that. And that's difficult. And, you know, how you have so many pressures from the world and the everyday life on you. Do we just take it for granted or a ho-hum type thing? I find myself struggling to put aside the cares that I have and focus on what Christ did for us.
I think we all do that.
I think so. You know, I think we all have failures at that.
Yeah.
Because I can... and especially when I would sit in the back, I would, you know, I would notice that, you know, the other people, you know, taking care of other things or pimping or, you know, doing things that distract their attention and their minds away from what they're doing. And, you know, and it's a struggle for me, quite often. It's a real work trying to stay focused.
And that's the most important reason that we're there.
Yeah, we wouldn't have the faith. We wouldn't have the promise if Christ had not died. And you're right. And it's just, you know, I mean, yes, we are supposed to sing. We are supposed to study God's word. These are all commandments. They're not suggestions. But it seems like that one particular item is, it's critical. It really is. Anyway, Micah is mentioning all of these crimes that these people have committed, dishonesty. He mentions that. Big time stuff. I mentioned idolatry. And of course, all of this is going to end in certain punishment. It's coming. And he lives to see it. Chapter 7 begins with Micah crying about the corruption of his time and the treachery and the violence and the bloodthirstiness that he sees going on. And these are the things that bring on the promise of God's punishment. And but then Micah kind of squares his shoulders, doesn't he? He says, well, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to stick around and see what God's going to do. And when it came to Israel, he stuck around, didn't he? In fact, he stuck around for some of the things that happened with Judah and actually prophesied about what's going to happen to Judah, even though he didn't live to see it happen. And Micah says, I'm waiting to see what God makes things right. Says, I'm counting on God listening to me. Micah 7:7, he says, as for me, Micah, I will look to the Lord. Boy, is that a lesson for us today? When you're in the middle of problems, when you despair at times, you get frustrated at times, you're in the middle of challenges or trials, and boy, am I in the middle of one right now. We've had our house up on the market for 6 months and shut it down again very slowly, adjusted our price downward 2 or 3 times, and interest rates, I understand, 7.34, something like that, really high, so that doesn't help a whole lot. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had 2 full-price offers inside of an hour of one another, just out of the clear blue sky. And all the stuff we've had to go through in this last 2 weeks has just driven me nuts. And I ended up falling flat on my back and was so sore I couldn't hardly move. I had sore muscles that I didn't know I had. But anyway, that was when Lenny stepped in for me last week. I really appreciated that. But we still haven't got this. So isn't frustration driving me nuts? What should I do? I should look to the Lord, shouldn't I? And that would give me comfort and peace. And I could lay back and relax. It's going to happen, or it's not going to happen. And we'll see what it does. So we all face these trying times from time to time, and we should do just like Micah did. We should look to the Lord for our peace and comfort. So then in chapter 7, Micah brings out God's mercy and his forgiveness, even when people are in despair. And he closes chapter 7 with a vision of the future when God and his people shall be supreme and the promise to Abraham will be accomplished. What was that promise to Abraham that he's talking about?
We'll have descendants more than the stars or more than the moon.
Okay. I didn't hear you.
It's right, say it. He will have descendants more than the stars, and God will bless him and bless the people that bless him. And
yeah.
And Abraham, you know, finally had Isaac. And
yeah, he'll be the father of many nations.
Through him, all the nations of the world will be blessed.
That's it. Through him, all the nations of the world will be blessed. And what is he talking about there?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Talking about the Messiah here. Okay. So, a quick review of Micah. And Micah prophesied during the reigns of what? Who? Jotham.
Ahaz.
And Hezekiah. All three of them, righteous kings. I'm sorry?
They were righteous.
Okay. Who was the bad guy?
Ahaz,
sure. Jotham was a righteous king. He tried to do everything he could to get back, make things right after he was took over the kingship from who? Manasseh, his father. And he tried to make things right. Then when he died, his son Ahaz came about and he just reversed it, everything, didn't he? And he did his best to ruin the nation of Judah. And he just about did. And I think a lot of the criminal activity that Micah talks about in his lifetime was during the time of Ahaz. I think during the time of Jotham, he didn't have a whole lot of time there. And then Ahaz came about, he saw the evil, and then of course Hezekiah came and reversed everything again. But I think that during Micah's lifetime, I think he prophesied about the evil that was going on in Judah during the time of Ahaz. Who was he contemporary with? Other prophet.
Jonah?
No.
Jose?
I'm sorry?
Jose.
Jose is one of them.
Oh, I'd say Isaiah. And Hosea.
Yes, that's correct. Isaiah. Yeah. Isaiah and Hosea. Who was his message primarily to?
Israel
and Judah as well. Yeah, okay. And he talked about their sins and all the evil that they were doing and their destruction. He foretold about their destruction coming. And he kept trying to hammer them on that, and but also their restoration. And the restoration did come eventually, didn't it? Didn't come during their lifetime, but it did show up. Chapter 1 talks about Israel doing especially. And they were evil for 200 years. Never had a faithful king. Evil kings right down the line. You know, and God sent numerous prophets during those 200 years to him. He kept sending prophets to him, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Men like Elijah, Elisha, Amos. Did it work?
No.
Yeah. You know, well, we know about Elisha, these three, Elisha, Elijah, and Amos. But you know, they were killing these prophets. These are three that we know that prophesied during some of that period of time. But there were a lot of others that were prophets that are not mentioned other than the fact that God sent prophets to them. And they murdered them, they stoned them, they sawed them in half. They did everything to them that they could possibly do because of this message they had from God. But Micah lived to see God's word come true when it came to Israel, didn't he? He saw the end of the nation of Israel. And in about 735, 734 B.C., Assyria descended on northern Israel and took most of the cities and area and the land in northern Israel and hauled the people off and sent them to elsewhere, brought people in. And then about 15 years or so later, they came back and they just cleaned Israel out, and that was the end of Israel. Assyria just completely made them a heap and completely destroyed the country, hauled the people off. So that we know as the end of Israel. They never came back. They were gone. And but at the same time, Assyria also devastated Judah, didn't they? Didn't get to Jerusalem, but they got up to the walls, didn't they? But even Micah saw him. Where was he from? Moresheth?
Yeah,
even his hometown and the area around his hometown were all destroyed and devastated by the Assyrians and their raids. In chapters 2 and 3, Micah refers to the brutality of the ruling class, the kings and all the followers of the king and the people that are in power there. He cried against their brutality towards the poor people. They took their fields away from them, and they even took the clothes off their back as they were walking by. You know, poor people probably didn't have that good of clothes, but they took them anyway. They took the houses away from women and children and ran them out. They hired false prophets to prophesy good things for them and false things that condone their evil deeds. So there were a lot of things going on back in those days that had Micah pulling out his hair. In Micah in 2:12, Micah predicts the doom of Jerusalem. And just like he predicted the doom of Samaria in chapter 1. And that's kind of interesting because, this, he's predicting the doom of Jerusalem. Didn't happen in his lifetime, did it? It happened a long time later. And yet his prediction, his prophecy came true. Then in chapter 4, chapter 4 starts with kind of a vision of a real peaceful and happy and prosperous nation and God, a God-fearing world, and with Zion as its head. It's really a wonderful picture of the future. Then all of a sudden, just abruptly, Micah goes back to his own troublesome times. And his prediction of the doom of Jerusalem. And he mentioned this in chapter 3 as well. But in 4:10, he predicts and talks about the people of Jerusalem being carried away where? Chapter 4, verse 10.
Of Babylon.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really an incredible prophecy at the time, because the big dog back in those days was Assyria. They ruled the world. And Babylon, who ever heard of Babylon? I mean, Assyria was the king. And this prophecy here that Micah made in 4:10 was 100 years. Actually, more than 100 years before the rise of the Babylonian Empire. What do we have in Nebraska right now? But anyway, Jerusalem survived the Assyrian assault and lived on until Babylon destroyed Assyria and then conquered Judah. What do we know about that? Jerusalem survived the Assyrian assault. We talked about that earlier in study of one of the prior chapters.
God sent a plague.
Yeah, remember that? Who was the king of Assyria at the time? Sennacherib? Yeah. Yeah. And he was assaulting Lachish, which is down by Micah's, not far from Micah's hometown, of course. And so he sent his people to talk to the elders on the wall of Jerusalem. Who was the king of Jerusalem at the time? Hezekiah, was he? And what Hezekiah, he prayed about it, didn't he? Laid it out on the table for the Lord. What did the Lord say?
Surrender.
Well, the Lord told Hezekiah.
Well, not the first time.
Yeah. The Lord told him that, and that wasn't with Sennacherib, that was his Sennacherib's father in an earlier time. But he told Hezekiah through the prophet, he says, there won't be an arrow shot at the city, and they won't build ramps up on the city walls to climb over and so forth. They won't bring siege engines and that type of thing. What happened? They had an army right up against the walls of Jerusalem. What happened?
Nothing.
Yeah, they had a plague, didn't they? Went through and it killed 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. And Sennacherib went back home, didn't he, in disgrace. It's kind of interesting because on the walls of his city, his home city, there is, they discovered a drawing or a plaque of Sennacherib's triumphs and making him look like a good guy and a mighty king and all that. And he said, I shut King Hezekiah up in his city so he couldn't come out. Didn't say anything about his army being destroyed, but he says, I shut King Hezekiah up, and he just turned it around and made it look like a victory for him. Okay, so anyway, Jerusalem survived the Assyrian assault, and it lived on until Babylon destroyed Assyria and then came after Judah. And this was the end of Judah. People were carried away to Babylon. Of course, we know what happens in Babylon. Daniel was there, and and a number of other people were there, and we know what happened to Babylon, and we have the stories there of Mordecai and King Ahasuerus. Xerxes, he was known by. But that was the end of Judah. And then chapter 5, Micah talks about the Messiah and his coming from Bethlehem of Judea, and he talks about the wonderful future that's in store. And Micah relates this to his situation with the Assyrians, but beyond the horizon is the Messiah from eternity. By where? Bethlehem. What did he mean by that? From eternity. Talking about the everlasting Messiah. He came from the beginning. From eternity, by way of Bethlehem. You know, they have a bunch of different people that throw out different numbers and estimates of how many prophecies and mention of estimates of Christ coming in the Old Testament. And we know some of them, you know, like for instance, Isaiah has a bunch of them, and here's one in Micah chapter 5, but there were a lot, even from Genesis on through, talking about the Messiah. It might not have said Messiah, but it referred to him. And it says it 200 to 400 times in the Old Testament. So the times, you know, the number of times vary, but somewhere between 200 and 400 people. But this prophet of Micah, this prophecy of Micah, is unique. It's the only one out of the hundreds of prophecies that says and mentions that Christ is going to come from Bethlehem. And so, being, it, this is, it stands out primarily because who knew this? Who knew of this later on in the Old in the New Testament?
Herod.
Yeah. Remember the old King Herod?
My Herod.
Yeah. He says, oh, I want to worship him. He's Bethlehem. So what did he do? Had all the male children killed, didn't he? So eliminated in competition later on down the road. But he remembered this prophecy from Micah 5:2. Okay. Then in chapter 6, just a quick one, and he reviews the sins of Micah's time. And mentions a certain calamity that's coming along. It's going to get here. And then Micah 7. Micah continues to suffer the sins, promises punishment. But he closes with a vision of the future when God and his people will rule supreme. Okay, that's all I have. Next week, we'll look at the short book of Nahum. Mm-hmm. That's right. So we'll look at that next week, and then if you get a chance, read the whole book. There's not very many chapters, they're very, very short. And so, anyway, anybody have any questions, comments, anything like that?